Marilyn McCoo and Billy Davis are no strangers to the entertainment world. As seven-time Grammy Award winners, both as part of the Fifth Dimension and later individually and collectively as duo and solo artists, they've been entertaining audiences for well over 50 years. They're currently performing their Up, Up, and Away show. Good morning.
Good morning, Tracy.
How are you doing, Tracy?
Okay, how are you?
Good, very good.
I know that Marilyn's parents were physicians. I was curious as to who, what, and where were your earliest exposures to music? What got you started in this whole thing?
Well, my father, between the time he graduated from college and before he started medical school, he was singing with a group.
Okay.
He was singing with two guys. My father was from Alabama, and he was singing with two friends, and they called themselves the Jones Boys. And they went up to New York, and they ended up having the opportunity to perform with the Fletcher Henderson Orchestra. I don't know if you have ever come across Fletcher Henderson's name, but
he's not familiar with him. No,
doing very well in the New York area, and they performed with Fletcher Henderson and his orchestra for a couple of years, and then that group broke up, and then Daddy left and went to medical school, and that's where he met my mother. But my father was always interested in music, loved music. And when he and my mother got married, and they ended up with four children, and my older sister and my father and my mother and I, he used to get us around a piano, and he would bring vocal arrangements in from churches, you know, and he would sit up and teach us these parts. And I was like 7 years old, and he's teaching me my part. I sang the melody because I was the youngest. And then they'd say, okay, see if you can hold these notes. And we would sing harmonies together, and I think that's where I began to love harmonies.
Billy, how about yourself? Where did you pick up the music bug?
Well, you know, to tell you the truth, Tracy, I think that God just gave me a gift. And with hearing music at a very young age, I just started listening to all different types of music. I was really knowing then that I love music, and I was listening to all types of R&B and pop and gospel and just you name it, blues. And just I couldn't get into classical. I couldn't get enough. And I just knew then that this was going to be something that I was too young to know that it was going to end up being my profession, but I knew then it was something that I loved and something that I wanted to do. And then when I got in school, I started dealing with some of the youngsters in school and started creating music and having groups and singing at parties and at high school functions. And it just kept going on and on. And I knew then, I was old enough to know then that this is something that I think I want to do the rest of my life. I didn't know that. I always felt like I could be really good at it and be a professional with it. And so I just followed it through. And
here you are today still doing it.
Here I am today, you know, still talking about it, still doing it, you know, and still loving it, yeah.
Well, you know, like Billy, when I was in school, I also got involved with, you know, when they'd have programs, the kids involved in the productions that you did in elementary school and junior high school, and I always wanted to be a part of that, and whenever they had like talent shows, I was I was always there to audition and see if maybe I would be picked to be a part of whatever the program was.
That's one of the things you do when you're in school. I mean, any talent show that comes up, you got to be a part of it, so you can win it. You know.
Well, we didn't have talent shows where anybody won. It was just talent shows where the kids got a chance to get up and show what they could do.
Show your stuff.
No, we had to win.
No, we didn't have competitive things that. Yeah.
Well, I was going to ask, one of the questions I had for you, Marilyn, was I saw that you were on Art Linkletter at 15. I was going to ask you how you ended up there, and I assume that was your first public experience. Do you remember what you performed at that point?
Let's see. I don't remember. To tell you the truth, there were a couple of songs that I used to sing. I either sang That's All, which was a torch song, or I was singing I'll Take Romance, because Edie Gourmet was out there, and she was popular, and I loved her music.
Love Stephen Edie.
let's see, I'm trying to think of, what was the other one? Our Love Is Here to Stay. It was one of those three songs.
So definitely a torch song at that point.
Well, actually, no, Our Love Is Here to Stay was more of a, was an up-tempo, happy song, happier song.
I'll have to look that one up. I'm not familiar with it.
You don't remember that song?
I'm afraid I
it's
don't.
It's very clear, our love is here to stay. You don't recognize
I'm
that.
I'm afraid not. I'm sure my brother, my brothers would know
well,
it. I'm the youngster in the family.
That just shows how young you are.
Yeah, right.
Well,
I'll tell you one thing that you can search out, you can research, and that's that the years ago, it, back in St. Louis, there was a show called the Russ Davis Hour, and I was singing with a group then called the Emerald, and we used to do that television show, and if you go back, I don't even know how to go back. I guess you do.
But he would know.
Yeah.
That's what Tracy does.
If I can't find it, my kids will.
That would blow my mind. I'm telling you, just to see it, because during those years, I don't even know how they were doing it. I was so young.
Yeah, they're probably doing kinescopes or something else if they taped it at all at that point.
Yes.
So after that era, the Fifth Dimension came into being down the road. I read about the High Lows. Is that correct?
The High Five.
I'm sorry.
The High Lows were an actual...
Yeah, I was going to say, that's the male group. My apologies. Shoot
group.
Me. Shoot me for that one.
The High Fives were a wannabe group. Well, you know, when I was in college, I started singing when I was in high school, I sang in a choir. I enjoyed the harmonies. And when I was in college, I knew that I wanted to sing, I wanted to do more solo work, but at that time, you know, you're in school and your day is comprised of so much to do. But there was a group that was that had been put together by a guy by the name of Lamont McLemore, who ended up being in the Fifth Dimension. Mm-hmm. And they would rehearse at night, and so I started going over and rehearsing with them, and that was fun. And we ended up starting to consider ourselves a group. We started calling ourselves the High Five. And that was the group that ended up, then we became the Vocals, and we actually had an opportunity to go out on tour with Ray Charles for a 1 3-month period.
Yeah, what was your takeaway as a young singer being on the road with Ray?
What did I take away from that?
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you this. In order to be on that tour with Ray Charles and with the group that I was singing with, I had to drop out of school for a semester. And my mother was not very keen on that, so I had to promise her that I would come back to school and finish. And what I did learn when I was being out on the road, in addition to having the wonderful opportunity to watch the true genius of Ray Charles every night, because he was such an amazing, artist, and his music was wonderful. He was funny. He had wonderful stories to tell. But anyway, the one thing I did learn was that the road is rough, and I knew that I was going back to school to finish. When I came back home, I went back to school and I graduated.
I think of that old joke. The kid says to the mother, "When I grow up, I want to be a musician," and the mother says, "You can't be both. You can't grow up and be a musician." Oh, boy.
Well, I'll tell you, I grew up on the road there.
That was a life experience there.
You got schooled in that.
I got schooled, and I said, I'm going back to school.
Well, and here you are. You know, I also want to congratulate you guys. Of course, I haven't had an opportunity, I hate to admit, to read your book about how you find love, faith, and lasting marriage in the entertainment world. I know your 50th wedding anniversary just came and went a couple of months ago. How do you separate the entertainment world from the real world and make it all work?
Well, you know, to tell you the truth, Tracy, I grew up in the church. And years ago, when Marilyn was going through all of those things, I was probably singing gospel songs in church. I sung with a group called the St. Gospel Singers in St. Louis, Missouri,
mm-hmm.
Probably for about 5 or 6 years. And we would travel all around the Midwest just singing at different churches and auditoriums and things like that. And
can I just interject that? But that was during the summer months, because otherwise you were in school.
Oh, yeah. Well, during the summer months, yeah. Right. And then after that, that's when I ended up going to the service. I started I started playing playing guitar and working in some clubs around St. Louis. And then I got drafted in the service, yeah.
Now, I know.
So, and then I had my own band in the service, a band called,
I'm forgetting the name, baby.
The Kingsmen.
The Kingsmen. Yes, that's what it was.
So we played all of the clubs, the officers' clubs, the EM clubs, and the enlisted men's clubs. And
that's when you were in Germany.
Yeah. I was stationed in Nuremberg, Germany for 18 months over there. So it was, music has always been a part of my life. And so when I came back, that's when I ended up coming to California and running into Maryland. Now, another interesting thing, all three of the guys that were in the Fifth Dimension were from St. Louis, Missouri. We all knew each other when we were kids.
Well, I didn't know that.
Yeah, we all knew each other when we were kids, but we had no idea that we would all migrate to Los Angeles at different times and end up in a group called the Fifth Dimension.
Well, it's interesting.
No idea.
And that's the way it ended up. I also know that you were in a group, I believe, with members of the Friends of Distinction. I don't know if you remember them or not.
Well, now that was
the
group.
Vocals.
That was the group that I was with.
Okay. Okay.
That was the group that that Lamont and I were in. A guy by the name of Harry Elston, who ended up forming the Friends of Distinction, and two more people whose names I could mention: Larry Summers and Fritz Baskin.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, after we came off of the road with Ray Charles, that group broke up. I went back to school and got my degree. And I guess about 6 months later, shortly after that, Billy came out to Los Angeles through Lamont. And that's how I met Billy, was through Lamont.
Okay.
Because, again, Billy said that they were all from St. Louis. And anyway, we started talking about forming a group for a hobby, because Billy wanted to sing solo. I wanted to sing solo.
Yeah, right.
But we still enjoyed group singing,
yeah.
And so we started this other group as a hobby, just for fun. And of course, that group ended up becoming the Fifth Dimension. And then Harry Elston was watching what we were doing, and he was saying, "Hey, wait a minute, I can do that."
And they started the Friends of Distinction. Yes.
So that's how that
the Friends of Distinction began.
Yeah.
Now, what was it like being signed by Johnny Rivers? I know that he had his imprint, Soul City, label that Capitol had put together for him. And what was all that like?
Oh, that was good. I mean, thank God for Johnny Rivers, you know, because Johnny Rivers being a pop, what would you call his music, pop country, like?
Right.
Did a lot of covers.
He did a lot of covers, but he had a certain sound, you know. But Johnny really loved R&B music, you know.
You're right.
And when he had made so many hits until Liberty, the company that he was recording for, gave him a production deal. And he said, "Now this is the chance he can get some groups and start doing some, getting his hands into some of the R&B work that he had enjoyed so much." But you know, the funny thing about that was when we got with Johnny and he signed us to Soul City, which was his label, we didn't do an R&B song. Our first song was from the release that the Mamas and Papas had done.
Oh, yeah, Go Where You Want to Go.
Go Where You Want to Go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we thought, oh, geez, this is not the Motown sound.
Yeah, this is not the Motown sound that we were hoping to be a part of.
Yeah,
but we ended up with a top 20 record, and we said, well, but this, it sure ain't bad.
Johnny kept saying, no, this song's going to be a hit.
Yes.
Well, we said, if you think it's going to be a hit, let's go with it, you know. And he was right.
Well, I know you recorded that. I know you went on and you got a lot of accolades, obviously, for Up, Up, and Away, which, of course, is the name of the tour you're doing now, the show you're doing now. I understand that most audiences really hadn't seen you at that point. If I can address the, I won't call it the race issue, it's not an issue, but the fact that you were not what they expected when you got out there and did Stone Soul Picnic.
Well, you know, back in those days,
right.
The radio stations really played. Radio stations still today play what they play, but
yes.
in the kind of music that they want to play. But back in those days, it was a lot more segregated than today. Today, it's more in terms of the actual musical style. And so, when we came out with "Go Where You Want to Go," everybody thought we were white.
Yeah, it did. It went on the pop stations they hadn't seen a picture of the group. And then when Up, Up, and Away came out, and the album came out, then they seen these five black people in the saloon. They flipped.
It's like, wait a minute, what is this? What is this?
You know? I was bait and switch, that
yeah. That is so true.
Yeah, right. And we had fun with it, but you know, it is what it is. But I stuck with pop, and the R&B stations wouldn't play
our music
at that time.
Really?
Yes, because they said, well, that's not R&B.
That's not our type of music. So
we were caught between a rock and a hard place.
Yeah, right.
The pop stations didn't want to play us because we were black, and the R&B stations didn't want to play us because our music wasn't R&B enough.
It was crazy.
But fortunately enough, our music did end up having enough crossover appeal that we started getting played on both types of stations.
But yeah, right.
And mentioned Stone Soul Picnic, that was probably one of our first biggest crossover
R&B crossover, right?
Yeah,
right.
Crossover record
pop,
that was played pop and R&B.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I bought that album, I have to admit, back many, 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 many moons ago.
Well, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Yes, right.
Obviously, you went on with the group and had a number of hits, and I kind of did a tongue-in-cheek thing with referring to individually and collectively when I did the introduction, because I think that was probably the last major album, if I'm not mistaken, as the Fifth Dimension with Last Night I Didn't Get to Sleep at Night on it.
Uh-huh.
You went on and did You Don't Have to Be a Star, another Grammy winner, number one on all the charts. And
mm-hmm.
and where do you spin off from there? Well, I know you did acting. I know you did gospel albums. Some friends of mine in Dallas still talk about one of the albums that was cut down there for Marilyn. Some people I know sang on it, as a matter of fact.
Oh, yeah, that was with Chris Christian.
With Chris Christian, yes.
Yeah.
Well, you know, so Billy and I ended up leaving the Fifth Dimension in 1975.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Because we were starting to, well, you know, the music was changing. Music was changing in the market, as it always does. And so you start looking at it and trying to decide, well, do we want to chase the market? That's what we used to call it, chase the market and try to do the sounds that are new. Or do we want to stick with the music that has worked so well for us?
Mm-hmm.
Because we had a lot of success and had a lot of fans who enjoyed our music. But, of course, we were used to being top 10. And so we were trying to figure out how are we going to keep our music coming out being top 10. And so this is where we started not agreeing on
mm-hmm.
what direction our music
mm-hmm.
should take. And that's when we decided that Billy and I felt like we wanted to do some new things. And so we ended up, at that time, we were married. And so we ended up deciding that we would launch out on our own careers and try to pursue those solo directions that we had always wanted
mm-hmm.
to pursue. And so that's how that happened. And then we ended up with You Don't Have to Be a Star.
Right.
Because we started realizing that if we started performing as solo artists, that we might not be touring together, and then our marriage might suffer.
And we might not be selling 50 years of marriage.
And so then we decided that we wanted to perform as a duet. So we went back to the record company that had agreed to record us as solo artists,
mm-hmm.
and said, "Would you consider recording us as a duet act.
Yeah.
And they believed in us, and they said, yeah, that would be fine, too. And that's how we ended up becoming Marilyn McCoo and Billy Davis Jr.
Right.
Which apparently you still are today, amazingly enough, after 50-odd years.
Yeah, exactly right.
Well, that hasn't changed.
Right. No.
Consistency. Now, how have you found that the audiences have changed? I mean, I know you're still out and you're performing the classic Fifth Dimension repertoire, and I know the current show has emphasis on other artists, including the Beatles. How do you find the audience reaction has been to the changes over the years and overall?
Well, you know, actually, our audiences, they are basically the same. I mean, to me, it's like when we go to perform at a concert or something, we still get people in our age bracket. And we also get some younger people who like their parents have been telling them about us and some other younger people who just
happen to like our music. Yeah.
They're just curious to see what we're going to do. And we end up with gaining some younger fans after they see us.
Right.
And, but most of the time, it's basically the same. I mean, we can sing Aquarius Let Sunshine in and they'd jump up and down just like it was 1969. Up in the air.
Well, it must be really cool having the audience, or maybe not, sing along with the songs and knowing every single word and nuance to the original recordings.
Yes.
No, it's wonderful because...
It's just beautiful to see.
Because it shows you how long-lasting your effect is on people.
Yes.
You know, people who grew up with your music. You know, when you hear the music that you grew up with, you never get old. You know, it always takes you back to those
right.
wonderful times. And then we also, in our shows, we do music from our era that was recorded by other artists. You know, music that we feel works for the show presenting.
Yeah, right.
And we find that, you know, the younger audiences today, too, have a lot more knowledge, musical knowledge, because of YouTube and all of the music that's available for them to hear today. And we find that the younger people in the audiences, when they know who we are, they know what we're about, but they come to see what we're going to do, and they have a good time.
Yeah.
As they should.
We thank God for YouTube because it keeps us alive.
Yes.
You know, I mean, people can go back and see some. In fact, we go back and see some of the stuff we forgot that we've done.
Yes.
On YouTube. Yeah.
Well, it's amazing to go back and look at some of those old recordings and some of the old TV specials and things that you did over the years. And it is a trivia thing. I mean, of course, we have to look to the future. Now, I assume that you're still releasing new songs. Are you producing new music at this point?
Well, what we have done was we've been working on a new project that is we're waiting for them to finish doing the sweetening and have it ready to present. We're working with BMG and we're just waiting for the project to be completed so that we can get it out in the market.
Get it out, yeah.
And see what kind of a response we're going to get.
Well, I look forward to hearing what it's going to be, what the current sound is going to be. In today's music, a lot of people say that today's music lacks content. Everything is done with sweetening and more about effects and technology. You know, as I said before we got the tape rolling here, or the machine rolling here, I'm old school, and the technology is probably more suited towards 16-year-olds like my kids. Do you think that the technology has taken away from the artist and the ability to perform, or do you think it's just enhanced things?
No, I agree with you. I agree with you on that point, that it has taken away because they don't get a chance to really develop their artistry to the fullest because they can always go get a gimmick to replace what they should really be doing vocally or whatever part of their talent that they're using. And, yes, I mean, you know, a lot of these artists that get on stage, they got to have something playing for them, or they can't perform. You know, it's like
auto-tune and other things too.
Yeah, auto-tune. Yep. They got to have all of these things that, you know, and you know, they take that away, they can't do nothing. You know, and that's not good. That's not good. But what we do, we never had that opportunity. We had to make sure that we did it all.
Old school. All old school.
It's just like you with the splicing.
You said still
you
can
had
do
a razor
it.
Blade and tape. You splice. Yeah,
absolutely.
You know, we know that.
and very well,
but
I might
know,
add.
But, you know, I do, but in defense of the younger people today, too, they work hard.
Oh, yeah.
Very hard. It's just that their focus is on different aspects.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we go out and sing, we do what we've always done. When we get out on stage and we sing, you're going to hear us. You're going to hear us singing, and we're going to hit those notes the way that they're supposed to be hit, because that's what we're used to.
Yes.
Now, if we were trying to dance and do all the other performance elements that a lot of the younger people do, we would have to have some help, because the way some of them move and dance and work as hard as they work, I don't think you could accomplish all of those parts of their performing, their performances that they do today.
It's just, be out of
it's
breath.
Just different.
Well, that's
well,
it.
We don't have to worry about dancing where we at anyway right now. You know,
we're not going to be doing that anyway.
Hey, we just get up and hit those. We want to hit our notes. You know.
Well, I mean, I'll say this, Tracy. We definitely have a lot of energy out there because we still perform, feeling like we did before. You know.
Oh yeah.
But I mean, we're not going to just stand in one spot and just sing. That's not what we do.
You can't do that with music. No,
not at all. There's a cross between what the kids consider performance today and what your generation, my generation, consider performing. There's a difference between seeing and Steve Initti or U2. Ashford Simpson, anybody from that era singing as opposed to I'm not going to mention current artist, don't want to trash them, but getting up there and doing weird vibrato stuff while trying to dance around like a jumping bean. It's not realistic.
Yeah.
What would you two say, I mean, obviously you have a large catalog of music and some which you still perform and some which you probably haven't in a long time. What would you say is your most memorable hit that you're asked for the most, or that you think is the most memorable?
You mean whenever we perform?
Whenever you perform, I mean, is there a song that everybody asks for that you consider to be your most memorable, either with the group, without the group, that seems to be the one that everybody wants to hear?
Well, probably Aquarius, That's a Sunshine.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would. I think that would be probably number one.
Yeah.
But after that, then it varies.
Yeah.
It varies. You know, some people want to hear Up and Away.
They want to hear Wooden Bell Blues.
Some people want to hear You Don't Have to Be a Star.
It just goes on and on.
Some people want to hear One Less Bell.
Last Night.
Yeah.
My favorite song. And, you know, we hear all of that.
And every now and then somebody will come up with something that's like, what?
Yeah, right.
Well, I was going to mention Dimension.
We haven't sung that song in 20 years.
Well, that's it. I was going to.
Rosecrans Boulevard.
Well, I was going to mention Dimension 5 and stuff that had really intricate harmonies all over the place, which honestly I think it couldn't be sung live anyway at this point. You know, it's not the kind of thing that you could really skip around and jump around to in public.
We would have to have some other good voices with good ears to really do all of that stuff that we did during those times with in the studio. You know, and two voices couldn't do it, you know.
No, I realize that. Yeah. Now, when you get a song or when you end up with a listening party or whatever to kind of pick through and listen to different things that are out there, can you usually tell what, almost immediately which is going to sound good to you and potentially the public, or is it something you have to really mull over the songs and let them kind of marinate?
Sometimes you just have to let it get out there and see, because you can't always tell. You know, sometimes it's a surprise. Aquarius Left at Sunshine was not a surprise. We just really believed that was going to be major.
Right.
But there have been some songs that you just don't know.
Right. I mean, you know, a lot of times when most songs, when you record them, you like all of them, because that's why you picked them to record. But, you know, it's like anything else. There'll always be something that's going to sound a little bit better to different people, to the masses, or whatever. Those are hard to pick, you know.
You know, one example is One Less Bell. none of us ever expected that to be a single. But there was a radio station down in New Orleans, and they, we don't know who the DJ was. They started playing One Less Bell to Answer, and they believed that that was a hit. And they kept calling the company, the record company, and telling them, you're missing a hit with mm-hmm. this song. And the record company didn't believe it either. And so then they said, well, if you get that song to be number, you know, in top five in your market, let us know. And they did. They came back. It ended up being a number two or number one record. And then the record company decided to release it.
They
acquiesced. And then it became a big hit for the group. But you know, a lot of times you just don't know.
Now, what do you guys listen to in your private lives? What songs do you have on your playlist? If you're using YouTube, obviously you got the computer technology to kind of pick and poke away at what's out there. What do you two listen to in your car or at home?
We listen to a lot of different things.
Yeah, we're all over the place.
We listen to the music today. Mm-hmm. We listen to some of the oldies because we enjoy them. We listen to... you know, we like to hear what the younger artists are doing today, because, mm-hmm. and we like some of the music that we hear because it's interesting and different and creative. But we like to turn back and forth. We love right. you know, listening to Sirius Radio and stations like that, because you know formats like that, because you can hear everything that's out there.
You know, I like some of the I don't know if you would call it rap or what, but it's when they sing, and then they might speak some words in there, and then they come back to singing. That might something like that.
Uh-huh.
But the straight rap music, the straight rapping,
yep.
I can't understand a word that they're saying, and I don't try to keep up with it. It just runs me nuts because I can't hear it, you know.
Yeah,
I've never understood that from my kids. My daughter can sit there and rap along with the stuff, and I just kind of look at her cross-eyed and say, are you listening to that stuff again?
Well, that's her music.
That's their music.
I know. Listen, our parents used to say the same thing, so...
Absolutely.
Tracy, one time I was watching a television award show of all this rap music.
Yep.
And, you know, when they would pan back and forth through the audience of these young people... All of them were rapping.
They knew every word,
all the words,
every nuance.
And I'm going, what? I couldn't understand a word that they were saying then.
Yeah.
But
the kids knew.
Yeah, the kids knew it. Yeah.
Well, I'd rather have my daughter knowing the nuances and lyrics and music for "If I Could Reach You" or "Stone Soul Picnic" or something else than. The current stuff that's out there, but amazingly, she and my son both know them all. It's amazing.
Yeah. Well, it's good that they know all of it. You know, it's just like to know how music really sounds, and if they want to rap and do that, that's another form of entertainment. You know, but not to me.
Right. Not to us. Now, when you're not performing these days, what do you do in your spare time? I guess now that you're moving up along and not touring as often as you used to.
Well, we have a ministry.
We don't have any spare time. Right?
That's the question.
That we are involved with, and
right.
And we enjoy that very much. And between the two, we stay very busy. And then, of course, being in the studio for the past, we've been working on this project for over a year.
Yeah.
And so that's kept us quite busy. So we are enjoying ourselves and enjoying staying in music, and thankful that we're still going out and working.
Yeah, and still able to work.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm. So we're very pleased with the way our lives are.
Well, I look forward to hearing what you're doing. Do you still add new songs to your sets? I know you said you're producing new music. Do you find that you're changing your repertoire, or do you pretty much stay with the same sets or freshen them up?
We freshen them up.
You know, we like to do things. I mean, we know we have to do our hits, but we also like to do things that we grew up with, the different types of music, and just let people know we can do more than just what you hear on the radio and stuff.
We like to throw in. You know, right. Billy sings some wonderful blues, And we put blues in our shows, and we like to throw in some jazz from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we're always freshening it up because, again, we want people to have, when people leave our performance, we want them to have a better idea of what we are about musically.
Who we are, right?
Yeah, and so you know, your hits don't tell the whole story.
Not at all, I'm sure. I mean, that's just one little piece of the puzzle, I would think.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And
right.
So it gives people a chance to find out the kinds of music that bring us joy, and that we select things that we think will be interesting for that particular audience based on where we're performing. If we're doing a concert, if we're doing a fair, if we're doing you know, it depends upon the facility and the setting.
Now, do you bring in your own musicians, or are you kind of reliant on what the different venues have when you get there? I don't know how you pick your musicians.
No, we bring in our own musicians.
We bring in our own people.
Yeah.
Great. Well, I look forward to hearing
when you do that, it gives you a lot of flexibility.
Yeah, right. Our music is a bit difficult. So to try to depend on the musicians that's there, we would have to rehearse and a few times,
to say the least,
before we would present it before people. Yeah.
Well, I look forward to hearing what you're doing.
All right, Tracy.
All righty.
Great. Yeah.